Hi, this is William Ramsey. Welcome to William Ramsey Investigates. On today's show, this will be a part two to a show that I titled and retitled. It was about Morse Allen and operational hypnotism. The new title, this part, will be Morse Allen, William Joseph Bryan Jr., and Artichoke, From Speculative to Operational Hypnotism, Part Two. So I'm going to read from a couple articles. One is an article from High Times in 1980, some from Vice-Up, from Steven Snyder at Vice Up, his blog, a few posts. And then I will read from a chapter in The Search for the Manchurian Candidate by Jonathan Marks that they kind of overlap. I think there's interesting information. But you'll see some of the familiar names if you've been listening to my show, some of these characters. Gittinger, Klein. A new one will be Nagel, which overlaps with the JFK assassination. If you listen to one of my shows, there was a connection between Gittinger and Laramie, right? Jeremy, who was warning in advance they were going to kill JFK. And Nagel's another one who overlaps with the kind of national security state hypnotism and the JFK assassination, which will be my next show. Some people haven't heard much about Nagel. He wasn't a central figure, but he was just one of these strange side figures, but also an interesting character in himself. And some of the newer information has been released about him, biographical information, actually, that not a lot of people have read or been interested in, but I find it very interesting. It's part of American history. Nagel's an interesting guy, but ties into kind of this theme of hypnotism that I've been covering. So I will read from this article, and this ties into, Klein ties into the death of John Lennon and Chapman, right? So, High Times, January 1980, XCA doc leads fight to limit hypnosis. This was released 2010. The author is Jeff Goldberg. Hypnotherapist Dr. Milton B. Klein, former consultant to the CIA's super-secret behavior modification project Bluebird, is currently campaigning for strict legal constraints on hypnosis, limiting its use to train members of the health professions. During the early 1960s, when the CIA was covertly funneling millions of tax dollars into a variety of brainwashing experiments involving LSD and other hallucinogens and electroshock, Klein provided expertise on hypnosis. He was outspoken in his belief that one of the central goals of these experiments, to create a hypnotized remote control assassin, was entirely possible, though he denies knowledge of any terminal experiments that would have tested his theories. We'll read about that in John Marks. The fictional Manchurian Candidate, presented in Richard Condon's thriller and later in a movie starring Frank Sinatra, is, in Klein's mind, still a frighteningly real specter. It cannot be done by everyone, he argues. It cannot be done consistently, but it can be done. Klein claims that given the proper subject and circumstances, by using hypnosis, he could produce such a killer in 3 to 6 weeks. His strong beliefs about the use of hypnosis as a technique of coercive persuasion to produce antisocial or criminal behavior are one reason he advocates legal restrictions on the practice. Klein spoke to High Times in his posh office suite overlooking Central Park in Manhattan, where today he conducts private hypnotherapy sessions. The antiseptic, subdued atmosphere of the office resembles that of any successful doctor or psychiatrist, although Dr. Klein is neither. He has a PhD in education. Commenting on his fears of unwitting Manchurian candidates roaming the streets of the world's political trouble spots, he cites the example of Paul Ritter, a young Danish man accused several years ago of committing a particularly brutal and senseless triple homicide. The authorities were baffled, Klein explains. He had no motive, didn't even know the people, and couldn't remember committing the crime. The room was ransacked as though robbery might have been the object, but nothing was taken. He was slightly retarded, but didn't seem deranged. He was a petty criminal with a jail record, but didn't seem like a mass murderer. Then it was discovered that during a 2-year term in prison, he had shared a cell with an ex-Nazi who was a hypnotist and wanted these 3 people killed. During that time, he was able to program Ritter to commit the murders and disguise it as a robbery. In American cloak and dagger circles, a plan to create a hypnotic zombie to assassinate Hitler was proposed by Stanley Lovell during World War II. Bluebird director Morse Allen, right? We're covering Morse Allen. Bluebird director Morse Allen discussed a terminal experiment on a 35-year-old double agent who talked too much and was to be hypnotized to assassinate a foreign official. The attempt was calculated to fail. Capture and interrogation were written into the scenario because Allen was equally interested in how well hypnosis would hold up under torture. It is not clear from the files released through the Freedom of Information Act whether this plan was carried out. It appears that eventually CIA interest in the subject waned when it became clear that a zomboid assassin was inefficient compared to the perfectly adequate supply of candidates available from the mafia for a price who would do the job and keep their mouths shut. Dr. Klein's concern, however, was not based only on his reaction to his CIA experiences. We must eliminate untrained hypnotists, he urges, especially in the field of entertainment. Hypnosis as a means of entertainment is in every aspect undesirable. It can severely alter a subject's emotional balance and produce traumatic reactions. For example, there was a case a few years back of a man who was suffering from psychosomatic paralysis of his right arm. There's nothing physically wrong. Well, a friend of his, an amateur hypnotist, was able to relieve the symptom in one session. The man went home and strangled his wife with his right hand. Clearly, the paralysis was a hysterical reaction to the deep, unexpressed hatred he felt for his wife. Another time, a 16-year-old girl in Israel was hypnotized by a staged hypnotist. She lapsed into a deep trance, became catatonic, and something, I can't read the rest of that, but it's you can't tell what traumas you may uncover. To support his argument that law should be instituted to guard against the future use and abuse of hypnosis, Klein cites the 1975 law passed in Oregon, making stage hypnosis illegal, and the 1954 National Association of Broadcasters decision to ban hypnosis from television as a form of entertainment. Ironically, many psychologists, scientists, and social critics, including Klein, have argued convincingly that television is a hypnotic medium, right? So that's included with Brian. Even more ironic is the fact that even such laws have been in effect for 30 years ago. Milton Klein might have been out of a job in the 60s. Morse Allen, creator of the Bluebird program and a hypnosis freak, was the student of a stage hypnotist whose boasts of sexual conquest using hypnosis turned on the CIA's chief, Sambas Bengali. Allen went on to pioneer the first Manchurian candidate experiment in which he hypnotized one of his secretaries to kill, with an unloaded gun, of course, a second secretary. The success of this experiment provided the impetus for later CIA efforts in hypnosis and Dr. Klein's subsequent involvement. Okay, so that is that article. Klein, Morse Allen, Brian mentioned. And this is from Steven Steiner's Vice Up blog. Really good. Still around. He said he wasn't writing into it anymore, but as a research point, really good. And this is a Secret Orders mentioned, Bluebird. Let's see. This is a quote from a Secret Order. Origins of CIA interest in hypnotism began before I arrived at the agency with Morse Allen. This is according to Sidney Gottlieb and others in SRS who recognized the practice as a possible means for eliciting information. Apparently, there was earlier interest in the subject of the OSS, but I'm unaware of the details or extent of that. Morse Allen, as I understand it, became deeply involved in conducting hypnosis experiments and elsewhere. And this is from John Marks. I'll read this. This will be in Chapter 11 from Search for the Manchurian Candidate. Very important book. Very suppressed book, my understanding. And then Brian gets mentioned here, and I read through that entire, what is believed to be Brian talking with Morse Allen in New York City, and this is mentioned here in Alberelli's Secret Order. And that's also a very important document, in my opinion. And this is a really interesting one. This is the connection between hypnosis, the JFK, and this interesting character, Nagel, Richard Case Nagel, who went to a bank in El Paso before JFK and shot at the ceiling with the intent to be arrested. He didn't want any part in the JFK assassination. And it's just one of those interesting side stories. It's mentioned some places, not mentioned in others. But he's an interesting person in his own right. And The Man Who Knew Too Much is a very well-researched book by Dick Russell about Nagel and so many elements of him, including some hypnosis. But I'm going to read this. just a little bit about it, because this is again from Steve Steiner's Vice blog. Certainly, there are ample indications that individuals were hypnotized and used as couriers so as to keep the information they were carrying secret, even to the courier, his or herself. For instance, in the classic The Man Who Knew Too Much, Dick Russell notes the following claim from Richard Case Nagel, a CIA and military intelligence officer, made concerning the use of hypnotism on couriers, quote, Nagel confirmed that hypnosis was used in intelligence for compartmentalization of information. He added that sometimes an intelligence courier, which was one of his own admitted roles in 1962 to 1963, might undergo such treatment. You only undergo hypnosis for certain projects, Nagel continued. It is used by the CIA for any number of reasons. To a degree in the recruiting program in the psychiatric division, it's actually a section of the security division to find out if you're homosexual or have done this or that. In instances, they use hypnosis for real, bona fide reasons. And that's from The Man Who Knew Too Much, Dick Russell. And this is just an interesting thing I came across, which was Hank Alberelli doing a Freedom of Information research in 2018 to the CIA on records for Morse Allen. And I think they got back to him and said, you know, pound sand. I don't think they gave him anything. But there's actually a record of it on Muckrock. You can see these kind of back and forth. And that's where I think this document between Brian and Morse Allen came from. But it's also Morse Allen's connection. This is from Ion Grillo, and he writes a lot about Mexico. But he references some information about the connection between Morse Allen and Gordon Wasson, right? So some people, I think it's Jan Ervin did a ton of work on Gordon Wasson. But it's just interesting that Morse Allen crossed paths with this kind of research into magic mushrooms, psychedelic mushrooms. I'll read from this. It's just a couple pages. CIA's Technical Services Division, which makes its Bond-style gadgets and concoctions, was first interested in mushrooms as poison. Discovering how Roman Emperor Claudius was killed by fungi that his wife Agrippina hid in his food, an officer filed a memo in the early 50s. Let's get into the technology of assassinations, he wrote. Figure out most effective way to kill, like Empress Agrippina. By 1953, a CIA officer was roaming Mexico looking for both toxic and narcotic mushrooms and learned about their shamanic use. His superior, Morse Allen, read his report and was intrigued by the potential of fungi to enhance interrogation. Quote, very early accounts of the ceremonies of some tribes of Mexican Indians showed that mushrooms are used to produce hallucinations, Allen wrote. In addition, this literature shows that witch doctors or divinators use some type of mushrooms to produce confessions or locate stolen objects. Essential that the peculiar qualities of the mushroom be explored, unquote. So that's a little bit of Morse Allen tied into that. The CIA, and I'll continue a couple of more chapters. The CIA recruited a young chemist at the University of Delaware, James Moore, for the mission. While doubling as a spy was exciting and lucrative, Moore would later describe his handlers at MKUltra as, quote, a small band of mad individuals, unquote. His work was filed in MKUltra subproject 58. Moore soon found a mushroom fanatic and New York banker called Robert Gordon Wasson, who had just struck jackpot. Wasson had ventured into the mountains south of the border with a photographer and tripped in a shamanic ceremony with a healer or curandera called Maria Sabina Magdalena Garcia. So maybe I'll read from that, but that again was from Crash Out by Ion Grillo. I'll try to put a link to that too. This is from his Substack. But that's kind of my reading from kind of some of the research notes that I have, but now I'll move to the Manchurian Candidate. Search for the Manchurian Candidate, excuse me. This is by, of course, John Marks, and he did a lot of work with other people. He's actually a big, I think he's still with us. I think he's still among the living, but I'll read from chapter 11 as much as I can in the kind of 45 minutes that I have left, but it'll overlap with some of the earlier information, but I think it's a worthwhile exercise. So the search for the Manchurian Candidate, chapter 11, hypnosis. No mind control technique has more captured popular imagination and kindled fears than hypnosis. Men have long dreamed they could use overwhelming hypnotic powers to compel others to do their bidding. And when CIA officials institutionalized that dream in the early Cold War days, they tried, like modern-day Svengalis, to use hypnosis to force their favors on unwitting victims. One group of professional experts, as well as popular novelists, argued that hypnosis would lead to major breakthroughs in spying. Another body of experts believed the opposite. The agency men, who did not fully trust the academics anyway, listened to both points of view and kept looking for applications which fit their own special needs. To them, hypnosis offered too much promise not to be pursued, but finding the answers was such an elusive and dangerous process that 10 years after the program started, CIA officials were still searching for practical uses. The CIA's first behavioral research czar, Morse Allen of Artichoke, was intrigued by hypnosis. He read everything he could get his hands on. In 1951, he went to New York for a four-day course from a well-known stage hypnotist. I already read that last time. This hypnotist had taken the Svengali legend to heart, and he bombarded Allen with tales of how he used hypnosis to seduce young women. He told the Artichoke chief that he had convinced one mesmerized lady that he was her husband and that she desperately wanted him. That kind of deception has a place in covert operations, and Morse Allen was sufficiently impressed to report back to his bosses. The hypnotist claimed that he spent approximately five nights a week away from home engaging in sexual intercourse. Apart from the bragging, the stage hypnotist did give Morse Allen a short education in how to capture a subject's attention and induce a trance. Allen returned to Washington more convinced than ever of the benefits of working hypnosis into Artichoke repertory and of the need to build a defense against it. With permission from above, he decided to take his hypnosis studies further, right in his own office. He asked young CIA secretaries to stay after work and ran them through the hypnotic paces, proving to his own satisfaction that he could make them do whatever he wanted. He had secretaries steal secret files and pass them on to total strangers, thus violating the most basic CIA security rules. He got them to steal from each other and to start fires. He made one of them report to the bedroom of a strange man and then go into a deep sleep. This activity clearly indicates that individuals under hypnosis might be compromised and blackmailed, Allen wrote. On February 19, 1954, Morse Allen simulated the ultimate experiment in hypnosis, the creation of a Manchurian candidate or programmed assassin. Allen's victim was a secretary whom he put into a deep trance and told to keep sleeping until he ordered otherwise. He then hypnotized a second secretary and told her if she could not wake up her friend, her rage would be so great that she would not hesitate to kill. Allen left a pistol nearby, which the secretary had no way of knowing was unloaded. Even though she had earlier expressed a fear of firearms of any kind, she picked up the gun and shot her sleeping friend. After Allen brought the killer out of her trance, she had apparent amnesia for the event, denying she would ever shoot anyone. With this experiment, Morse Allen took the testing as far as he could on a make-believe basis, but he was neither satisfied nor convinced that hypnosis would produce such spectacular results in an operational setting. All he felt he had proved was that an impressionable young volunteer would accept a command from a legitimate authority figure to take an action she may have sensed would not end in tragedy. She presumably trusted the CIA enough as an institution and Morse Allen as an individual to believe he would not let her do anything wrong. The experimental setting, in effect, legitimated her behavior and prevented it from being truly antisocial. In early 1954, Allen almost got his chance to try the crucial test. According to a CIA document, the subject was to be a 35-year-old, well-educated foreigner who had once worked for a friendly secret service, probably the CIA itself. He had now shifted his loyalty to another government, and the CIA was quite upset with him. The agency plan was to hypnotize him and program him into making an assassination attempt. He would then be arrested, at least for attempted murder, and thereby disposed of. The scenario had several holes in it, as the operators presented it to the Artichoke team. First, the subject was to be involuntary and unwitting, and as yet no one had come up with a consistently effective way of hypnotizing such people. Second, the Artichoke team would have only limited custody of the subject, who was to be snatched from a social event. Allen understood that it would probably take months of painstaking work to prepare the man for a sophisticated covert operation. The subject was highly unlikely to perform after just one command. Yet so anxious were the Artichoke men to try the experiment that they were willing to go ahead even under these unfavorable conditions. Quote, the final answer was that in view of the fact that successful completion of this proposed act of attempted assassination was insignificant to the overall project, to wit, whether it was even carried out or not, that under crash conditions and appropriate authority from headquarters, the Artichoke team would undertake the problem in spite of the operational limitations, unquote. This operation never took place, supposedly. Eager to be unleashed, Morse Allen kept requesting prolonged access to operational subjects, such as the double agents and defectors on whom he was allowed to work a day or two. Not every double agent would do. The candidate had to be among the one person in five who made a good hypnotic subject, and he needed to have a dissociative tendency to separate part of his personality from the main body of his consciousness. The hope was to take an existing ego state, such as an imaginary childhood playmate, and build it into a separate personality unknown to the first. The hypnotist would communicate directly with this schizophrenic offshoot and command it to carry out specific deeds about which the main personality would know nothing. There would be inevitable leakage between the two personalities, particularly in dreams. But if the hypnotist were clever enough, he could build in cover stories and safety valves, which would prevent the subject from acting inconsistently. All during the spring and summer of 1954, Morse Allen lobbied for permission to try what he called terminal experiments in hypnosis, including one along the following scenario. Quote, CIA officials would recruit an agent in a friendly foreign country where the agency could count on the cooperation of the local police force. CIA case officers would train the agent to pose as a leftist and report on the local Communist Party. During training, a skilled hypnotist would hypnotize him under the guise of giving him medical treatment, the favorite artichoke cover for hypnosis. Starting to sound familiar. The hypnotist would then provide the agent with information and tell him to forget it all when he snapped out of the trance. Once the agent had been properly conditioned and prepared, he would be sent into action as a CIA spy. Then agency officials would tip off the local police that the man was a dangerous communist agent, and he would be arrested. Through their liaison arrangement with the police, agency case officers would be able to watch and even guide the course of the interrogation. In this way, they could answer many of their questions about hypnosis in a live guinea pig who believed his life was in danger. Specifically, the men from Artichoke wanted to know how well hypnotic amnesia held up against torture. Could the amnesia be broken with drugs? One document noted that the agency could even send in a new hypnotist to try his hand at cracking through the commands of the first one. Perhaps the most cynical part of the whole scheme came at the end of the proposal. Quote, in the event that the agent should break down and admit his connection with the U.S. intelligence, we A, deny this absolutely and advise the agent's disposal, or B, indicate that the agent may have been dispatched by some other organ of U.S. intelligence, and that we should thereafter run the agent jointly with local intelligence service. An artichoke team was scheduled to carry out field tests along these lines in the summer of 1954. The planning got to an advanced stage, with the Artichoke Command Center in Washington cabling overseas for, quote, time, place, and bodies available for terminal experiments, unquote. Then another cable complained of the diminishing numbers of subjects available for these tests. At this point, the available record becomes very fuzzy. The minutes of an Artichoke working group meeting indicate that a key agency official, probably the station chief in the country where the experiments were going to take place, had second thoughts. One participant at the meeting, obviously rankled by the obstructionism, said if this naysayer did not change his attitude, Artichoke officials would have the director himself order the official to go along. Although short-term interrogations of unwitting subjects with drugs and hypnosis, the A treatment, continued, the more complicated tests apparently never did get going under the Artichoke banner. By the end of the year, 1954, Alan Dulles took the behavioral research function away from Morse, Allen, and gave it to Sid Gottlieb and the men from MKUltra. Allen had directly pursued the goal of creating a Manchurian candidate, which he clearly believed was possible. MKUltra officials were just as interested in finding ways to assert control over people, but they had much less faith in the frontal assault approach pushed by Allen. For them, finding the Manchurian candidate became a figurative exercise. They did not give up the dream. They simply pursued it in smaller steps, always hoping to increase the percentages in their favor. John Gittinger, the MKUltra case officer on hypnosis, states, quote, predictable absolute control is not possible on a particular individual. Any psychologist, psychiatrist, or preacher can get control over certain kinds of individuals, but that's not a predictable, definite thing, unquote. Gittinger adds that despite his belief to this effect, he felt that he had to give a fair shake to people who wanted to try out ideas to the contrary. Gottlieb and his colleagues had already been doing hypnosis research for 2 years. They did a few basic experiments in the office, as Morse Allen did, but they farmed out most of the work to a young PhD candidate at the University of Minnesota, Alden Sears. Sears, who later moved his CAA study project to the University of Denver, worked with student subjects to define the nature of hypnosis. Among many other things, he looked into several of the areas that would be building blocks in the creation of a Manchurian candidate. Could a hypnotist induce a totally separate personality? Could a subject be sent on missions he would not remember unless cued by the hypnotist? Sears, who has since become a Methodist minister, refused to talk about methods he experimented on with to build second identities. In 1957, he wrote that the experiments that needed to be done could not be handled in the university situation. Unlike Morse Allen, he did not want to perform the terminal experiments. Milton Klein, a New York psychologist who says he also did not want to cross the ethical line but is sure the intelligence agencies have, served as an unpaid consultant to Sears and other CIA hypnosis research. Nothing Sears or others found disabused him of the idea that every Manchurian candidate is possible. It cannot be done by everyone, says Klein. It cannot be done consistently, but it can be done. A one-time president of the American Society for Clinical and Experimental Hypnosis, Klein was one of many outside experts to whom Gittinger and his colleagues talked. Other consultants with equally impressive credentials rejected Klein's views. In no other area of the behavioral sciences was there so little accord on basic questions. You could find an expert who would agree with everything, says Gittinger. Therefore, we tried to get everybody. The MK Ultra men state that they got too many unsolicited suggestions on how to use hypnosis in covert operations. The operators would ask us for easy solutions, recalls a veteran. We therefore kept a laundry list of why they couldn't have what they wanted. We spent a lot of time telling them some young kid whose idea we had heard 100 times why it wouldn't work. We would wind up explaining why you couldn't have a free lunch. This veteran mentions an example. CIA operators put a great deal of time and money into servicing dead drops or covert mail pickup points, such as a hollow tree, in the Soviet Union. If a collector was captured, he was likely to give away the locations. Therefore, agency men suggested that TSS find a way to hypnotize these secret mailmen so they could withstand interrogation or even torture if arrested. Morse Allen had wanted to perform the terminal experiment to see if a hypnotically induced amnesia would stand up to torture. Gittinger says that as far as he knows, this experiment was never carried out. I still like to think we were human beings enough that this was not something we played with, said Gittinger. Such an experiment could have been performed, as Allen suggested, by friendly police in a country like Taiwan or Paraguay. CIA men did at least discuss joint work in hypnosis with a foreign secret service in 1962. Whether they went further simply cannot be said. Yeah, Gittinger was in Paraguay, by the way. Assuming that amnesia would hold, the MKUltra veteran says the problem was how to trigger it. Perhaps the Russian phrase meaning you're under arrest could be used as a programmed cue, but what if the police did not use these words as they captured the collector? Perhaps the physical sensation of handcuffs being snapped on could do it, but a metal watch band could have the same effect. According to the veteran, in the abstract, the scheme sounded fine, but in practicality, a foolproof way of triggering the amnesia could not be found. You had to accept that when someone is caught, they're going to tell some things. MKUltra officials, including Gittinger, did recommend the use of hypnosis in operational experiments on at least one occasion. In 1959, an important double agent operating outside his homeland told his agency case officer that he was afraid to go home again because he did not think he could withstand the tough interrogation that his government used on returning overseas agents. In Washington, the operators approached the TSS men about using hypnosis, backed up with drugs, to change the agent's attitude. They hoped they could instill in him the ability or the necessary will to hold up under questioning. An MKUltra official, most certainly Gittinger, held a series of meetings over a two-week period with the operators and wrote that the agent was a better-than-average hypnotic subject and that his goal was to get out of intelligence work. The agent probably can be motivated to make at least one return visit to his homeland by application of any one of a number of techniques, including hypnosis, but he may redefect in the process. The MKUltra official continued that hypnosis probably could not produce an operationally useful degree of amnesia for the events of the recent past or for the hypnotic treatment itself, that the agent probably has the native ability to withstand ordinary interrogation, provided it is to his advantage to do so. The MKUltra office recommended that despite the relatively negative outlook for the hypnosis, the agency should proceed anyway. The operation had the advantage of having a fail-safe mechanism because the level of hypnosis could be tested out before the agent actually had to return. Moreover, the MKUltra men felt that a considerable amount of useful experience can be gained from this operation, which could be used to improve agency capability in future applications. In effect, they would be using hypnosis not as the linchpin of the operation, but as an adjunct to help motivate the agent. Since the proposed operation involved the use of hypnosis and drugs, final approval could only be given by the high-level clandestine services committee set up for this purpose and chaired by Richard Helms. Permission was not forthcoming. In June 1960, TSS officials launched an expanded program of operational experiments in hypnosis in cooperation with the agency's counterintelligence staff. The legendary James Angleton, the prototype for the title character Saxuntan on Aaron Latham's The Orchids for Mother, and for Wellington in Victor Marchetti's The Rope Dancer, headed counterintelligence, which took on some of the agency's most sensitive missions, including the illegal agency spying against domestic dissidents. Counterintelligence officials wrote that the hypnosis program could provide a potential breakthrough in clandestine technology. Their arrangement with TSS was that the MKUltra men would develop the technique in the laboratory while they took care of field experimentation. The counterintelligence program had three goals. One, to induce hypnosis very rapidly in unwitting subjects. Two, to create durable amnesia. And three, to implant durable and operationally useful post-hypnotic suggestion. The agency released no information on any field experimentation of the latter two goals, which, of course, are the building blocks of the Manchurian candidate. Agency officials provided only one heavily censored document on their first goal, rapid induction. So they're keeping a lot of the information public, or they redacted it. In October 1960, the MKUltra program invested $9,000 in an outside consultant to develop a way of quickly hypnotizing an unwitting subject. John Gittinger says the process consisted of surprising somebody sitting in a chair, putting your hands on his forehead, and telling the guy to go to sleep. The method worked fantastically on certain people, including some on whom no other technique was effective, and not on others. It wasn't that predictable, notes Gittinger, who states he knows nothing about the field testing. The test noted in that one released document did not take place until July 1963, a full 3 years after the counterintelligence experimental program began, during which interval the agency is claiming that no other field experiments took place. According to a CIA man who participated in this test, the counterintelligence staff in Washington asked the CIA station in Mexico City to find a suitable candidate for a rapid induction experiment. The station proposed a low-level agent, whom the Soviets had apparently doubled. A counterintelligence man flew in from Washington, and a hypnotic consultant arrived from California. Could that be Brian? Our source and a fellow case officer brought the agent to a motel room on a pretext. I puffed him up with his importance, says the agency man. I said the bosses wanted to see him and, of course, give him more money. Waiting in an adjoining room was the hypnotic consultant. At a prearranged time, the two case officers gently grabbed hold of the agent and tipped his chair over until the back was touching the floor. The consultant was supposed to rush in at that precise moment and apply the technique. Nothing happened. The consultant froze, unable to do the deed. You can imagine what we had to do to cover up, says the official who was literally left holding the agent. We explained we heard a noise. We had heard a noise, got excited, and tipped him down to protect him. He was so grubby for money, he would have believed any excuse. There certainly is a huge difference between the limited aim of this bungled operation and one aimed at building a Manchurian candidate. The MKUltra veteran maintains that he and his colleagues were not interested in a programmed assassin because they knew, in general, it would not work, and specifically, they could not exert total control. If you have 100% control, you have 100% dependency, he says. If something happens and you haven't programmed it in, you've got a problem. If you try to put flexibility in, you lose control. To the extent you let the agent choose, you don't have control. He admits that he and his colleagues spent hours running the arguments on the Manchurian candidate back and forth. Castro was naturally our discussion point, he declares. Could you get somebody gung-ho enough that they would go in and get him? In the end, he states, they decided there were more reliable ways to kill people. You can get exactly the same thing from people who are hypnotizable by many other ways. You can't get anything out of people who are not hypnotizable, so it has no use, says Gittinger. The only real gain in employing a hypnotized killer would be, in theory, that he would not remember who ordered him to pull the trigger. Yet at least in the Castro case, the Cuban leader already knew who was after him. Moreover, there were plenty of people around willing to take on the Castro contract. A well-trained person could do it without all this mumbo-jumbo, says the MKUltra veteran, by going to the mafia for hitmen. CIA officials, in any case, found killers who had a built-in amnesia mechanism that had nothing to do with hypnosis. The MKUltra veteran gives many reasons why he believes the CIA never actually tried a Manchurian candidate operation, but he acknowledges that he does not know. If the ultimate experiments were performed, they would have been handled with incredible secrecy. It would seem, however, that the same kind of reasoning that impelled Sid Gottlieb to recommend testing powerful drugs on unwitting subjects would have led to experimentation along such lines, if not to create the Manchurian candidate itself, on some of the building blocks of lesser antisocial acts. Even if the MKUltra men did not think hypnosis would work operationally, they had not let that consideration prevent them from trying out numerous other techniques. The MKUltra chief could even have used a defensive rationale. He had to find out if the Russians could plant a sleeper killer in our midst, just as Richard Condon's novel discussed. If the assassin scenario seemed exaggerated, Gottlieb still would have wanted to know what other uses the Russians might try. Certainly, he could have found relatively expendable subjects, as he and Morse Allen had for other behavioral control experiments. And even if the MKUltra men really did restrain themselves, it is unlikely that James Angleton and his counterintelligence crew would have acted in such a limited fashion when they felt they were on the verge of a, quote, breakthrough in clandestine technology, unquote. So you can kind of read through this one chapter. It's really interesting because they don't know certain stuff. Certain stuff was ultra, Marx is admitting it's ultra secret, that they didn't know, they're hemming and hawing. There's kind of interesting footnotes here. And this is one, it's like after the mob, it's like referring to the CIA mob relationship. Author Robert Sam Anson has written, quote, it was inevitable. Gentlemen wishing to be killers gravitated to killers wishing to be gentlemen, unquote. Pretty interesting. And then this is about the programmed patsy, right? So not the programmed killer. And this veteran, I think he's referencing Gittinger. The veteran admits that none of the arguments he uses against a conditioned assassin would apply to a programmed patsy, whom a hypnotist could walk through a series of seemingly unrelated events, a visit to a store, a conversation with a mailman, picking a fight at a political rally. The subject would remember everything that happened to him and be amnesiac only for the fact the hypnotist ordered him to do these things. There would be no gaping inconsistency in his life of the sort that can ruin an attempt by a hypnotist to create a second personality. The purpose of this exercise is to leave a circumstantial trail that will make the authorities think the patsy committed a particular crime. The weakness might be that the amnesia would not hold up under police interrogation, but that would be not matter if the police did not believe his preposterous story about being hypnotized or if he were shot resisting arrest. Hypnosis expert Milton Klein says he could create a patsy in 3 months. An assassin would take him 6. So this patsy creation is very important. It's often overlooked. But there's another interesting... this is another interesting footnote. And this is from Marx himself quoting, under my freedom of information suit, the CIA specifically denied access to the documents concerning the testing of hypnosis and psychedelic drugs in cooperation with foreign intelligence agencies. The justification given was that releasing such documents would reveal intelligence sources and methods which are exempted by law. The hypnosis experiment was never carried out according to the generic description of the document, which the agency had to provide in explaining why it had to be withheld. Right. So they kept some of this stuff away because their excuse was it was connected to other programs with other intelligence agencies. So it wasn't disclosed. So not everything was disclosed by the CIA. People think that they like burned up all the records or something. And the Geschichter Fund, this is another footnote. Sears, we talked about, he was in Denver, still maintains the fiction he thought he was dealing only with a private foundation, the Geschichter Fund, and that he knew nothing of the CIA involvement in his funding his work. Yet a CIA document in his MKUltra sub-project says he was aware of the real purpose of the project. He's lying. Moreover, Sid Gottlieb brought him to Washington in 1954 to demonstrate hypnosis to a select group of agency officials. So that's probably another means of inquiry is this guy Sears, Alden Sears. Let's find out his research. Anyway, so that's part two. That's Morse Allen, William Joseph Bryan Jr., and Artichoke, from speculative to operational hypnotism, part two. My next series will be on Nagel, who I mentioned earlier. Thank you for listening.